It's 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting the U.S. Senate passes sanctions targeting North Korea. The sanctions on the North and its foreign suppliers and collaborators come one day after America's top intelligence official warned of North Korean nuclear, ballistic, and cyber capabilities. Here is Senator Amy Klobuchar.
We must take strong action to curb North Korea's nuclear program and address the other threats that it poses to the U.S. and our allies. Weak sanctions against North Korea have clearly proven unsuccessful.
Wednesday's unanimous vote followed North Korea's launch of a long-range rocket Sunday, as well as a recent nuclear test. More than 30 organizations, including researchers, academic journals, and fundraisers, have agreed to share data on the Zika virus. They have signed a statement committing themselves to ensuring that any information relevant to combating Zika is made freely and openly available to the international community as soon as feasibly possible. Nigeria says it will boost security at its camps for refugees after two female suicide bombers killed at least 58 people at a camp in Dikwa. Officials said three female suicide bombers disguised themselves as refugees and entered the camp. Two blew themselves up. A third changed her mind and surrendered to police. The focus of the U.S. presidential campaign is quickly moving to upcoming contests in South Carolina and Nevada. Early political surveys in South Carolina show businessman Donald Trump with a big lead over his long list of opponents. In the Democratic race, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton holds a large edge over Senator Bernie Sanders. This is VOA News. The Justice Department has filed a lawsuit against the central U.S. city of Ferguson, Missouri, after it refused to accept a proposal that would have made changes to its police department. The Ferguson City Council said the package cost too much. Here is Attorney General Loretta Lynch.
We're suing because at this point the negotiations were concluded, and the agreement between the parties was that they would review, the City Council would review the agreement that had been struck by both sides and decide whether to accept or reject it. And last night's vote was a rejection of that. Whether or not there'll be further negotiations is something that I really can't speculate on. We will proceed with litigation, and we will anticipate the city to respond in court.
Lynch said the residents of Ferguson have been waiting, quoting now, decades for justice, having endured what she called civil rights breaches that established a pattern and practice of racially biased policing. French deputies have adopted changes to that nation's constitution. The government argues the changes will help France fight terrorism. The vote Wednesday is just the first hurdle before it becomes law. Here's Lisa Bryant.
President François Hollande proposed the changes following attacks that killed 130 people last November in Paris. The most controversial clause to strip convicted terrorists of their French citizenship if they are dual citizens sparked last month's resignation of Hollande's justice minister, Christian Taubira. The second proposal aims to write state of emergency provisions into the Constitution. Rights groups have harshly criticized the proposed constitutional reforms and slammed what they say are abusive and ineffective police action during the state of emergency. Lisa Bryant, Paris.
Also in France, Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius is leaving his post to become the president of the Constitutional Council. That's the country's Supreme Court that decides if legislation is in compliance with the Constitution. The African Union force in Somalia is warning al-Shabaab militants are planning to disguise themselves as AU soldiers to carry out attacks in parts of Somalia. The goal, it says, is to turn Somalis against AMISOM, which has protected the government for the past 9 years. The head of the U.S. Central Bank says the American economy faces some global threats that could hurt growth. Some analysts interpret her remarks as a signal that the Federal Reserve may delay further interest rate increases. In remarks to a congressional committee Wednesday, Federal Reserve Chairwoman Janet Yellen said uncertainty about China's currency policies and its economic prospects have contributed to increased volatility in global markets. Checking markets on Wall Street today, U.S. stock indexes were mixed at the close of trade. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today's Thursday, February 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi says it feels vindicated now that the United States has accused Rwanda of destabilizing Burundi.
For us, we say it's better later than never, because we've been telling the Obama administration about this for the last 7 or 8 months. But of course, in the beginning, we were told that we were just trying to divert the attention of the international community on Burundi.
Alain Yamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. A new report says the UN mission in the Central African Republic needs to be strengthened. Lessons learned from Ebola might help in the fight against the Zika virus. And it is exactly 1 week before Uganda's February 18th presidential election.
Even in my previous engagements, I've never had a situation where even the most poor peasants turn up and make financial contributions and bring materials, chickens and food and everything.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is the leading opposition challenger to President Yoweri Museveni, and the United Nations says road safety measures can prevent millions of deaths and injuries globally. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our Listener of the Day and our Black History Month Facts of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi says it feels vindicated now that the United States has accused the Rwandan government of involvement in destabilizing activities in Burundi. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that the United States had warned Rwanda not to do anything that will further destabilize Burundi. Burundian Foreign Minister Alain Nyamitwe says the United States must go beyond the rhetoric and take concrete action.
For us, we say it's better later than never, because we've been telling the Obama administration about this for the last 7 or 8 months. But of course, in the beginning, we were told that we were just trying to divert the attention of the international community on Burundi towards another country. And yet we had credible intelligence confirming the fact that are now being accepted or publicly criticized by the United States of America. So for us, it's okay. But we want the U.S. to move beyond simple rhetoric and take action, because those are absolutely acts that disturb the peaceful coexistence of states. Those are acts that go against the United Nations Charter. Those are acts that go against any established international organization that you can name.
So, Mr. Minister, when you say you hope that the United States will go beyond rhetoric, what specifically can the United States do?
Well, actually, we're not even calling just the United States of America. We're calling all the international community to take action against such acts, because I believe a state cannot disturb the peaceful coexistence with its neighbors and get away with it. I think that, it is high time we all, collectively started acting against aggressive states. We want to live in peace with our neighbors. As a matter of fact, we enjoy happy and peaceful relationships with all our neighbors except Rwanda. But we want it to be known to others that Burundi will not relent until it is respected in its rights and its sovereignty, until that the population of Burundi is also respected.
Last week, there was a United Nations UN panel report saying that Burundian refugees have been recruited at refugees camp in eastern Rwanda with the goal of removing President Nkurunziza. President Kagame has dismissed that report as very childish.
That's not the first time that the government in Rwanda has dismissed credible reports. You'll recall that a number of reports were released on the role that that country has played in supporting the M23, which had attacked DRC a few years back. Another number of reports were released on the role that that country has played in destabilizing the eastern part of Congo, even before the M23. I'm not surprised, therefore, that even this one will be dismissed on the basis that it is, childish. All we know, and we have evidence to support our claims, is that refugees have been recruited, including underage refugees, and have been conscripted into rebel groups with the aim of attacking Burundi in order to destabilize the country and ultimately to remove the current government elected by the people.
Alain Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. It is exactly 1 week before Uganda's February 18 presidential and parliamentary elections, and main opposition candidate Chisa Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change, the FDC, who has been drawing enormous crowds during his campaign rallies, says he fears voter bribery could be one of the obstacles to his victory. Mr. Besigye also said on Tuesday that if elected, he will set up a government of national unity that could even include members of the ruling National Resistance Movement, the NRM. Besigye has run against President Museveni in three previous elections. Earlier this week, Ugandan government spokesman Ofwano Opondo said the NRM will once again deflate what he called the Besigye bravado on February 18th. Dr. Besigye says perhaps Mr. Opondo was referring to the three previous elections that the government has stolen from him.
Extremely high enthusiasm the population has demonstrated, not only by turning up at our rallies, but by offering lots of cash contributions, which is unprecedented in Uganda's political history. Even in my previous engagements, I've never had a situation where even the most poor peasants turn up and make financial contributions and bring materials, chickens and food and everything. You know, if that demonstration of support is something that the government spokesman would like to brush aside as something that can be defeated.
Dr. Besigye, what do you make of the arrest of General Sejusa? Because the government has said that the general was arrested because he was involved in political activities.
Of course, that's just ridiculous, because whereas indeed I am aware that military law forbids serving officers taking partisan political positions, which I'm not aware Mr. Sejusa has done, but it's very evident that partisan political position is only offensive if it is against Mr. Museveni. We have many serving officers who are right now deeply involved, openly involved in the campaigns for Mr. Museveni's party all over the country, senior members of the military, and who no finger is being raised against at all, including, of course, the head of the Uganda police, who is also a general in the military.
You have been quoted as saying that if elected, you will form a united government that might even include members of the the ruling NRM. Is that possible?
Yes, it is actually a position of our party. It's a position of my election manifesto. We consider that any government that will succeed the NRM must function as a transitional government, because it must establish or re-establish foundations of a democratic state. We have been governed, certainly over the last 30 years, as a military dictatorship. But even before that, that was pretty much the case. As you may be aware, in Uganda, in entire history, since independence, no leader has ever handed over power peacefully to another. If it happens this time, it will be the very first time.
That was Dr. Chisa Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change in Uganda. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 18th. Still to come, Mark Oldman Sports in our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day. Please send your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The human rights group Amnesty International says more needs to be done to strengthen the UN mission in the Central African Republic, also known as MINUSCA. In a new report, Amnesty argues that weaknesses within the mission were exposed during last September's violence. As Nick Long reports from Bangui, MINUSCA says it has learned from that experience.
Amnesty's report pays tribute to MINUSCA forces, who it says have saved many lives, helped prevent the Central African Republic from escalating further, and often displayed bravery at significant cost. but it says gaps in their capacity were cruelly exposed during 3 days of armed group violence in September when 75 civilians were killed in the capital, Bangui. Amnesty researchers say MINUSCA's 2,660 soldiers and police in Bangui were almost entirely absent from key areas of this conflict until late afternoon on the 27th and were unable to help transfer badly wounded people to hospitals. The report finds that since then the mission has performed better, but that key weaknesses remain. These include lack of armoured personnel carriers, lack of intelligence gathering capacity, and poor motivation of some units, particularly some that have not been paid their full UN salaries. Commenting on the report Wednesday, MINUSCA spokesman Vladimir Monteiro said the UN High Commission for Human Rights also raised concerns about MINUSCA's late reaction to the events in September.
Nous saluons ce rapport parce qu'il permet de voir les choses, mais en même temps...
We welcome this report, says Monteiro, because it helps us see things more clearly. At the same time, it confirms that MINUSCA's intervention has saved lives. The mission has learned lessons and has taken steps since then, he added.
L'une des principales mesures a été la création...
One of the main steps taken, he says, was to set up a joint task force for Bangui, which has produced results with MINUSCA's operation Free Movement, so that today people can move freely to and from the PK5 district. PK5 is Bangui's lone remaining Muslim community and has been the main flashpoint in the capital. Speaking on condition of anonymity, a MINUSCA insider told VOA that many criticisms in the report are not really of the United Nations, but of countries involved with the mission. Some governments do not pay their men their full UN salaries and do not have the means or the political will to move assets like armoured vehicles out of the home country, he said. MINUSCA will be on guard for any unrest as the CAR holds a presidential runoff vote this Sunday. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
Now that the Ebola epidemic has ended in West Africa, Zika has the world's focus. And as Carl Pearson reports, health experts and governments are applying some of the lessons learned during the Ebola crisis in Africa to fight the Zika virus in Latin America and the Caribbean.
The Zika virus has claimed few lives so far, while more than 11,000 people died from Ebola.
We saw Liberians dying every day. And you see people sick. And up to when I talk about it, I think I still shed tears because these were horrible experiences that we don't want for Liberians to go back to those days.
Experts don't expect Ebola to ever return with such ferocity.
Right now, in the three heavily affected countries of West Africa, there are response systems. I don't think we're going to see anything like the kind of terrible epidemic we saw over the past 2 years.
Those countries now have laboratories, better hospitals, and public health systems. The slow response from donor countries and the World Health Organization enabled Ebola to tear through West Africa. In contrast, the WHO has already called Zika an international emergency because of its link to birth defects. But experts say more needs to be done.
We need to build the systems around the world to find things when they first emerge, to stop them rapidly, and to prevent them whenever that's possible.
Large pharmaceutical companies worked cooperatively to produce Ebola vaccines. These companies say they need to be consulted sooner when a health crisis strikes.
We are necessary. NGOs cannot develop vaccines and manufacture them to the kind of scale that we need.
Drug companies are ready to start working on a Zika vaccine, and experts from the U.S. and other countries are working in Latin America to help find the cause of the virus's alarming link to birth defects. But funding is also critical, not just for Zika or Ebola, but to combat any virus.
Next time, we may not be so fortunate as to have something we can contain. We might have a novel influenza that will literally sweep the world and cause millions of deaths in its wake, and we can't allow that to happen.
VOA will take a closer look at Zika, the international response to its spread, and its connections with birth defects as information unfolds. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations reports that 1.25 million people died in road crashes every year. As Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, the United Nations says its road safety measures could save millions of lives.
The UN Economic Commission for Europe reports road crashes are the number one cause of death among people aged 15 to 29. The ECE, which regulates and sets road and vehicle safety standards, says another 20 to 50 million people worldwide are injured in these accidents. It says 90% of the 1.25 million road deaths worldwide occur in low- and middle-income countries, although they account for only 54% of the world's vehicles. It notes Africa has the highest fatality rate, representing 43% of road traffic victims. UNECE Executive Secretary Christian Fries Bach says these deaths and injuries result in tremendous loss for grieving families and severe economic costs for society. He says societies have to pay the health costs of people who are badly injured and can no longer work and be productive. He says ways to avoid road crashes are known, and the auto industry knows how to produce safe cars, which are universally sold in Europe, North America, and other developed countries.
But when they sell the same car in Africa and Latin America, they take out the safety features. They take out the airbags, they weaken the frame, they produce cheap cars that look exactly like the cars we see on the roads in Europe, but when people crash, they get killed.
Bach says manufacturers can implement key safety measures in their vehicles without significant cost. He says a package of measures that can save lives, including airbags, autonomous braking systems, and seat belts, would cost less than $200 per car. ECE Chief Bach notes too many pedestrians in Africa lose their lives because roads do not have simple safety measures such as proper crossing points. He notes the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and other development institutions and agencies that pay the cost of infrastructure in Africa should insist road safety measures be implemented. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sponsor here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with cricket. England beat Namibia by 203 runs at the ICC Under-19 Cricket World Cup in Fatula in Bangladesh on Wednesday. Today, Thursday, Namibia faced Nepal in the seventh place playoff. Turning to athletics, the Africa Women's 400-meter hurdles champion Wenda Nell of South Africa aims to reach the finals at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics in Brazil. Nell admits that being a finalist at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China last year has given her more confidence.
My main goal was always to try and run sub 54 seconds, so that is what I will aim for this year.
Because you know some of your key rivals around the world. Do you see yourself in the mix, at least with the semi-finals or even possibly a final position in Rio?
Definitely. I think the final in Beijing gave me a lot of confidence, knowing I am capable of running amongst the world's best. So I'm going to do what I can, put in the hard work, and then hopefully I can run again in Olympic final.
Just before the Olympics, we have the Africa Championships, and this year it's on your home soil here in South Africa. How does that fit into your general program leading up to the Olympics?
It will be an important competition, as I am defending champions. Yeah, we will see how the races in Europe goes, and then I'll come back for the Africa Championships.
That was Wenda Nell, the Africa Women's 400-meter hurdles champion, speaking in the South African capital, Tshwane. Finally, in football, Kenya is set to build two new stadiums for the 2018 Orange African Nations Championship, the Kenya Sports, Arts and Culture Cabinet Secretary Hassan Wario told the Nairobi media. He says the stadiums will be built in the capital Nairobi and Eldoret, some 300 kilometers northwest of Nairobi. Presently, Kenya has two stadiums in Nairobi that meet FIFA-approved standards. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 11th. On this day in Black history, the first fugitive slave law was passed by the United States Congress. The law required that slaves who ran away be captured and brought back to their masters. Those who knew of and did not report runaway slaves could be fined and even jailed. Also on this day in 2012, superstar singer Whitney Houston died at the age of 48 in a Los Angeles hotel the night before the Grammy Awards. Plagued by substance abuse in her later life, Houston had become one of the most popular and celebrated singers in her early career. Did you know that a Virginia slave named Henry Brown escaped to freedom by packaging himself in a wooden box? He made up his mind to escape after his wife, Nancy, and their three children were sold away from him. In March 1849, Brown had a white abolitionist friend named Samuel A. Smith packaged him in a wooden box and shipped him by Adams Express to anti-slavery headquarters in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. 27 hours later, Brown arrived safely. On this day in African history, in 1990, Nelson Mandela of South Africa was released from Victor Verster Prison near Cape Town after 27 years. In 1993, Mandela won the Nobel Prize for Peace for helping to end apartheid and establish a multiracial government in South Africa. And on this day in African history, in 2011, President Hosni Mubarak of Egypt resigned after being in power for 30 years. Mubarak had refused to step down earlier as protesters demanded his removal after weeks of anti-government sentiments. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 11th. Congratulations to Nok Kaunda of Lilongwe, Malawi, Abraham Lang of Jos Plateau State, Nigeria, and George Temba of Capitol Building in Monrovia, Liberia. You are the winners of our February 10th question, who was the first African-American to receive the Pulitzer Prize? The answer, Gwendolyn Brooks. Now, here is our question for today, February 11th. Who started the idea of Black History Month celebration in the United States? Once again, who started the idea of Black History Month celebration in the United States? Send your answers to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address.
Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Don't give it up, don't give it up.
Get up, stand up.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Two senior U.S. diplomats on Wednesday accused Rwanda of destabilizing activities in neighboring Rwanda, in neighboring Burundi, where political violence has left hundreds dead. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield spoke of her concerns to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. She cited a number of reports from U.S. officials on the ground in Africa. Another top diplomat, the U.S. envoy for Africa's Great Lakes region, Tom Perillo, said there are credible reports of Rwanda officials recruiting Burundi refugees in Rwanda camps to fight for the Burundi opposition. Nigeria says it will boost security at camps for refugees driven from their homes by violence after two female suicide bombers killed at least 58 people at a camp in Dikwa. Vice President Yemi Osinbajo said Wednesday it is regrettable that the heartless terrorists chose to unleash their wickedness on people who were taking refuge from previous acts of destruction in their homes. He promised the government will place formidable security around camps for what is known as internally displaced people. That's it for this Thursday, February 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.